Bibles to the book of Hebrews, the third chapter, where we'll begin this morning in our study. I want to take a moment to welcome to our family our new members. Shira McMurray, very special young lady. It's been our privilege to study with her for the last couple of months in our home. And of course, Matt is no stranger to most of us. And both of these individuals have acknowledged to me a desire to be stronger in faith, a desire to serve Him more faithfully. And Matt, on a number of occasions, has expressed how grateful he is for your love and support and encouragement since his return from California in very difficult times. And we want to welcome both of them to our family. Good to have you as a part of our family. And I know they would solicit and your continued prayer in their behalf. Most of us know that the book of Hebrews was written to those who were wavering in faith. And thus, we find the admonition that are found, first of all, in the third chapter of Hebrews and the 12th verse. Where he says, "Beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God, but exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." In the fourth chapter and the first verse, the writer says, "Therefore, since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it." And in the 10th chapter, and in the 23rd verse, chapter 10 and verse 23, the writer says, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful." And again in verses 35 and 36, "Therefore do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward, for you have need of endurance, so that after that you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise." The answer, of course, to this wavering faith was a Christ-centered faith. Thus we find that the Hebrew writer would say in the 10th chapter in verse 39, chapter 10, verse 39, "But we are not of those who draw back to perdition, but of those who believe the saving of the soul." And in the 12th chapter, when Paul talks about, or the writer talks about, running the race, he says in verses 1 and 2, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." At the summit of all of this, we're already probably familiar with the fact that in the 11th chapter, we find that the writer enumerates Old Testament worthies that are examples of wholesome faith. And he makes this observation. He says, "Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, for by it," he says, "the elders obtained a good testimony." That is, they proved themselves. They were approved of God. And later on in the same chapter, he would say in verse 39, "And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise." That is, they were approved of God. Common men, ordinary men and women, who were approved of God because of their faith. Now, first of all, consider with me from the 11th chapter of Hebrews, that the writer tells us, first of all, some of the aspects of wholesome faith. Actually, I would like to consider three of them. Number one, he tells us in his abstract description of faith in verse 1 that faith is the conviction, he says, of things not seen. Some translations say the evidence of things not seen. I am told that the word there, the Greek word, is a legal term that would describe evidence that would be admissible in a court of law. There where, if there was a fair-minded jury, would consider the evidence and then come to a firm conviction. The point is that God has given us enough evidence to truly believe in Him though we have not seen Him. God has given enough evidence. And that's what they did. They believed. These worthies believed in God. And they believed that truly He was one who was a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. The second aspect of wholesome faith is also in verse 1. And that is a personal acceptance of things. He said it is the assurance of things hoped for. Some translations say the substance of things hoped for. That is the foundation of things hoped for. Literally, the word means to stand under. Thus, faith becomes, in a sense, the foundation of our confident expectation. That is, not only do we believe in God, but we truly and really believe in the promises of God. Perhaps the greatest or my favorite verse in all the chapter is what the writer says in the 13th verse when he says, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth." The kind of attitude that we ought to have. Assured of the promises of God and embracing that God has truly promised for us something better than the day. They really believed in God and they believe that God will fulfill His promise. The third aspect of wholesome faith is active dependence. Not only did they believe in God and believe in the promises of God, but their faith was manifested in trust and obedience. He says in the 11th chapter in verse 6, he says, "But without faith it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him." Diligence here is involved in this biblical faith. And of course there are examples. First of all, in the 7th verse, he says, "By faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not seen," that is, he heard the testimony of God, "he was moved with fear," that is, there was emotion involved, "and being moved with godly fear, he prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became the heir of righteousness, which is by faith." There's Noah, against all the odds, having never seen a flood, but believing and trusting in God, who had the courage to stand alone, and because he did, to save himself and his household. By faith, Noah prepared an ark. He obeyed. By faith, Abraham is mentioned in verse 8. Obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. It was by faith that they overcame the physical allurements of the world, and they believed in a better day that God had promised. God said, "Go." Abraham went. God said, "Noah, I want you to build an ark." And Noah was willing to build the ark. All of this describes, I think, in a sense, all that encompasses the kind of faith that God desires for us to have. Man's mental, emotional surrender to God. God says, "And I'm willing to do." Regardless of circumstance, regardless of whatever may be surrounding us, regardless of whether or not it really makes sense, God said it, and I'm willing to do it. And thus we find in the 11th chapter this Hall of Fame of faith who obtained a good testimony. Who obtained a good testimony, who were approved of God, willing to do as God said. Ordinary men and women who are given to us to encourage us that you and I can also be like Abraham and Noah and Sarah and Joseph and the others that are mentioned here. That by faith we can defeat sin in our life. And by faith that we can be faithful. And by faith we can truly finish the race. I mean, look at the list. Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses. And then notice what he says, beginning in the 36th verse. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings. Yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. And all of these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. Warren Wiersbe makes an interesting observation about these individuals. He says, the people named in Hebrews 11 were ordinary, who accomplished great things. Gideon was a frightened farmer when God called him. Moses was a fugitive from justice. Jephthah was an illegitimate son, unwanted by his family. They could not do great things alone, and so they trusted God to do great things for them. They all trusted God, and God used them to change the world. And we can be like that also, trusting God and thus changing the world. But more importantly, receiving the approval of God, God's approval. Ordinary people empowered by faith to do extraordinary things. Well, when we begin to apply this faith, we begin to notice three other features. Number one, by faith they had spiritual vision. That is, by faith they saw. I love that word that's used in the 11th chapter. When he says in the 13th verse, he says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them. Did they literally see? No. But by faith they believed it to be a reality. And by faith, though we have not seen heaven, we believe it to be a reality. We consider the evidence admissible in a court of law. God has given us sufficient evidence. And though we have not seen, we truly believe. By faith we have vision of something better. In fact, the Hebrew writer continues, though not using the word itself, but just notice a few examples. First of all, in verse 20. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come, things in the future. In verse 21, by faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshiped, doing what? Leaning on the top of his staff, looking forward to the future. And in verse 22, by faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instruction concerning his bones, looking forward to the future. And when he described the great faith of Moses, again, the wonderful character description that he gives here, in beginning in verse 23 down through verse 27. But notice specifically that he says in verse 26, he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. And in verse 27, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured. Why? Because he saw him who was invisible. Literally? No, not literally. But he really believed. Moses has greater faith in an invisible God than he does in a visible and powerful Pharaoh of Egypt. He looked to the reward. This kind of faith influences our daily life. When I truly believe, it means that I'll keep myself pure, though there is the allurement of temptation. It means that I'll watch the way I talk. I'll be careful with the corrupt speech, and I'll watch the gossip and the slander when pride raises its ugly head. It means that I believe the best in my brother, though he may be struggling. And it means that day by day, regardless of the circumstances and regardless of where I live or what I am doing, that I will reflect the holiness of God in the way I dress, in the way I talk, in the things that I do, in the places that I go, even though it may not be popular. It amazes me. I remember one time we were on vacation in Colorado, and there was a lady there that used to wait on us at Wasson Ranch. She was a Baptist. But she said, "You'll be amazed, George, at how many people come on vacation and lose their religion." People that I know back home, that they're just the most righteous people you would ever know, and they come up here and they totally lose it. I wonder how many times that happens among our fellowship. We lose all sense of decency and honesty and modesty because we're on vacation. Whenever did we go on vacation from God? Never. By faith, I overcome the allurements of the world because of the spiritual vision. I truly believe in God. I trust in Him and the desiring to do what He wants. And thus, by faith, there is this submission to God. Submission to God that is mentioned, first of all, in the part of Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household by which he condemned the world and became the heir of righteousness, which is by faith. Now, where is the sense in that? Where is the sense in building an ark? It was unquestioned submission. But God said it, and Noah's willing to do it. No excuses. And by faith, he says in verse 8, that Abraham went off the map. He left the Ur of Chaldees and left his home. And he went to a place not knowing where he was going, but trusting in God to lead him. And in the same chapter, down in the 17th verse, it says, "By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, who had received the promises, offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, 'In Isaac your seed will be called,' concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which also he had received him in a figurative sense." Where's the moral and theological sense of that? God says, "Abraham, I want you to go offer your son." "Okay, I'll do it." It doesn't make sense to me. There was unquestioned submission. God said it. "Okay, God, if that's what you want me to do, I'm willing to do it." And in the 30th verse, "By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled 7 days." The kind of military strategy that would drive any logical general crazy. "Why don't you go march around those walls 7 times? "Okay, if that's what you want, God, that's what we'll do." Do you have that kind of faith? Reality is that there are a number of things at times in Scripture that don't make sense. The reality is that there are times when we may come at a point in our life when we may bump into something in the Word of God that is far different from what we had always believed. God said it. I need to do it. Unquestioned submission. This was the kind of faith they had. To do all that God requires. And to refuse to do what God has not authorized. Finally, their faith was sacrificial. We certainly would not question that in regard to Abraham. "I want you to go give the son a promise. I want you to sacrifice him." Abraham was willing to do that. And the Scriptures tell us that he was willing to do that because he truly believed that God was able to raise him up, yes, even from the dead. What would cause him to do that? What would cause him to believe in that? Well, reality is because God, by His power, had brought life to a dead womb and then brought the Son of Promise into this world. If God can do that, I'll take His life and God can bring Him back to life again. What great faith it was in the part of Abraham. That's sacrificial. By faith, Abraham was willing to leave his homeland in verse 8. And finally again, he says in verse 35, think about this. And think about how comfortable we are today to worship God. Oh, we have made such a great sacrifice today to come and worship God. Not. We don't understand. He says, women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Others had trial of mockings and scourging, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskin, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. And all of these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God, having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect. It recalls to me a passage that I didn't put on the chart, but in the 10th chapter, back in the 32nd verse, the writer had reminded these people of the courage that they had had in the past. He says, recall the former days in which you were, in which after you were eliminated, you were endured a great struggle of sufferings, partly while you were made a spectacle both by reproaches and tribulations, and partly while you became companions of those who were so treated. For you had compassion on me in my chain, joyfully accepting the plundering of your goods, knowing that you have a better and enduring possession for yourselves in heaven. And so if my government decide to enter my home and take all my goods, so what? I have a better home. Everything here is temporary. It's all superficial. The only thing that counts, well, you know the rest of it. Fellowship with God. That's all that counts. You believe that? I want you to notice what the Hebrew writer says in the 16th verse. He says, but now they desire a better. They lust after a better country, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. He's prepared a city for those who truly believe. Do you? You really believe? Where do you stand with Him today? What have you done today to make sure that your life is right with Him? Is there something we can do for you today to encourage you and help you in that matter? If there is, we certainly would welcome that opportunity. If we can encourage you in any way, we invite you to come. Would you come as we stand and sing the song selected?